immortal, invisible, God, only wise, in light, inaccessible, hid from our eyes, most blessed, most glorious, the Ancient of Days, almighty, victorious, thy great name we praise. Those words to that very famous hymn were written by Walter Chalmers Smith, whom I had not really heard of until this week. The Reverend Dr. Walter Chalmers Smith, DD, LLD, graduate of Aberdeen University and New College, Edinburgh, and in 1893, the moderator of the Free Church of Scotland, poet, novelist, hymn writer. But I guess King Solomon had never read him. Immortal, invisible, God only wise, in light, inaccessible, hid from our eyes. And yet here, when we meet King Solomon, he's trying to move his God. How do you move your God? Now, moving is one thing we can all count on, and that's for sure. Indeed, the poet Robert Frost was asked to define life in three words, and he responded, "It keeps moving." And the dynasty in this case has moved. King David, who ruled for 40 years or more and is the great king of lasting memory, has been replaced by his son, who is a slick fellow full of shenanigans. David is dead and buried, and a new broom comes along and sweeps clean. With the help of his mother, who was a bit of a schemer, he changed the scene. New staff, perhaps new decorations in the palace, a new color scheme to go with his sense of style, a new chef, and certainly a new food taster, you can't trust anybody, and new alliances, and new wives, and new concubines, says the Bible. Indeed, Solomon was famous across the ancient world for the number of concubines he had. How in the world did he ever get his work done? Well, everything is moving all the time, and you and I have been moving too. For me, it's almost 3 years already that I've been retired, almost 3 years, and I see my life very differently now. From someone who used to be present to things, I am absent to most things. And from someone who was on the front line of some things, I am now at the rear of the bus in most things. And from having an agenda, I drift. And from dealing with particulars every day, I'm awash in generalities. And I wasn't in any church for a year after retirement. I sat in my little writing shed at the cottage, never went near a parish, never sat in a pew, just let the tide of the last 50 years drain right out of me to see what would happen. And no one wrote and no one called. That's fair game, you're retired. No one asked me to preach. And after about a year and a half, I said to God, "If I write a Christmas sermon, would you give me some place to preach it? Amen." And within a couple of days, my kids phoned and said, "Why don't you do a Facebook presentation on Christmas morning? Put the sermon together, make a note to Facebook saying you're going to preach at 10:30, and let people know." Well, I went to my daughter Janet's and sat in her office, and at 10 o'clock we pushed all the right buttons, and about 60 people tuned in for the old man's Christmas Day sermon. And I liked that. And then somebody said, "Well, maybe nobody's asking you to preach because they don't know you're available. Have you got your name on the Sunday supply list?" And I hadn't, so I put it on there. And a few months later, a little congregation called and said, "Could you give us a couple of Sundays by Zoom?" And then they said, "Who are you anyway?" And after I told them, they still didn't know, but they took a chance on me anyhow. And then from there, a congregation elsewhere called for one Sunday in Advent, and I've been preaching to them on Zoom for the last 7 months, more or less. I've never met them in person, but every Sunday morning we tune in at 10, and about 60 people join on board, and we're having a good time, and it starts again in September. So it's been a lot of changes. So Solomon was moving his God, but what was he actually moving? He was moving ways of seeing God, you see. He was adjusting the vision of God to suit the theology he needed to uphold his kingship. Get God behind you in order to have a successful life. So he said, we're going to have more elaborate ceremonies, lots of color and loud trumpet sounds and the sacrifice of animals every 50 meters or so, and lots of military horses marching up and down. People like that. And people will look at these ceremonies and they will say of me, look how much he loves God. And the corollary is, look how much God loves me. You see, Solomon, in the midst of a shaky start, was trying for stability and longevity and good luck and firm control in the kingdom. And who doesn't want that? I was thinking that most of the prayers I remember in the churches I have attended and worked in have those themes in Sunday prayers: life, wealth, health, peace, stability, power, wisdom, meaning, smooth sailing. Please, God, deliver those things, and we shall praise you eternally. God, please deliver the goods. Amen. Well, there's a telltale verse in the middle of that long reading from Kings, and it says that as people were sweeping behind the altar and picking up the bits of candle wax that had dropped there over the years and pushing the boxes out the door, suddenly the place was filled with the very presence of God, the smoky, deep, undeniable presence of the sacred. It sent the priests and the Levites running. The movers took a one-hour lunch break that day, anxious not to come back into that strange space. Now, I know about moving because about 3 weeks ago, my wife Elspeth and I moved. We had a co-op apartment, as many of you know, for 10 years. It had belonged to my late mother-in-law, and then we got a dog, whom we love, and then we got the letter from the co-op apartment saying, you can't have a dog. So my wife got all worked up, rightly so, and said, well, nuts to you, we're going to move. So we put the place up for sale and rented a very expensive apartment around the corner, and then COVID hit, and we spent 12 weeks out of a year in our expensive Toronto apartment. It's a very pricey way to store your furniture. We ended up staying at the cottage for 18 months, and we're still there. But then, 3 weeks ago, we bought a two-story condominium on Avenue Road, and it's the one that my wife had been looking at for 35 years because it belonged to her girl guide leader when she was a young teenager. And all through the years, she had said, if you ever come to sell, please give us an opportunity. And now the woman is 93 and has moved into a senior's home, and she said to Elspeth, if you would like it, let's talk about it. So we moved, a two-day move. Everything's piled sky high. It's under renovation. There's no TV, so I've been sitting with the TV changer looking at the wall for 5 days, waiting between services, and I have one chair to sit in, and one light works, and I can sleep on the bed. But it's ours, and I like it. It's very much like camping by the roadside somehow. And as I was thinking about our situation and how much in flux it is, I got thinking about that victim in the story of the Good Samaritan. I hadn't made this connection before. The victim in the story of the Good Samaritan was moving his God too. Did you see it? He was moving it from the big public God, Jerusalem, going down the road to Jericho, to his private chapel, his own walled city, where his own dear inner God sustained his life. And while he was on that road, thieves set upon him and broke his spirit and his sense of divine belonging. They beat him to a pulp and took everything he had, and he felt profoundly vulnerable and let down by the sacred God whom he had entrusted with his sense of self and with his health all those years. And he was rescued, wait for it, he was rescued by the private God of the Samaritan, heart to heart, kindness to kindness. Now, the Samaritan had a temple somewhere else in Samaria, but on that day, it was the gentle heart of one person caring and loving for another which came to the rescue. Now, the thing about that road is that we are all on the road somewhere between Jericho, our private God, and Jerusalem, the public God, and thieves are moving on that road too. We are all vulnerable to profoundly hurtful things. We live on a public road. And as the writer to the Ephesians said, we are surrounded by strange spirits and principalities and powers that can pounce on us and hurt us. Who could have imagined Michael Spavor and Michael Kovrig, two Canadians, thinking that they would spend years in a Chinese prison over something with which they have little to do? Suddenly the principalities and powers are at work, robbing them of their life. And people in Afghanistan who have spent so long trying to break through for women and children, such a young country, and from all reports, such a beautiful country, being overrun in 5 minutes by people who are terrible and terrorists and intent on breaking down everything that is good in the human spirit. It's a dangerous road, a road full of misdirection and fake news and an underbelly of the far right always trying to take things away, and racism and misogyny and glass ceilings that just will not go away, and quiet, hidden rejections, little rejections that break each other's hearts day after day until we are all smaller. And I thought, this is Satan on the road. The word Satan means accuser. The accuser breaks down our trust and our most sacred and dearest sense of God. See what happened to you? See what the world is like? You can't trust the deity. You can't trust anybody. You're all going to break and you're all going to fall, says the accuser. Well, this brings us to the moving day and what to wear. And this brings us to the text about the whole armor of God. And it struck me as strange, the notion that God needs to wear armor at all. Of course, that's not what the verse means, but I saw it that way for the first time. It means, of course, that God equips us with armor to wear. But there is a sense that we and God, when we get together, are vulnerable, and perhaps both sets of the equation need armor to protect us. Head, heart, will, impetus, musculature, our place in the world, the realm of our dreams, all need to be protected by armor. Look at each one of the pieces. The helmet protects your head, where the greatest ideas and sense of the world is contained in safety. The shield protects your viscera, where your feelings are, so that once they are hurt, they can heal. And once they reach out, they can do some good for somebody. And the breastplate covers your heart of love. And the shoes give you flexibility and the ability to move quickly. And the sword gives you something with which to defend good things and to strike out in favor of good things. The whole armor of God. I began by saying that Solomon moved his God, but in reality, God was really moving in Solomon, just as God is always moving in us, either to build us up or break us down a while or help us to change and redirect as the currents and the winds blow. God is moving in this congregation, in its style, in its new leadership, in the things that are already happening, seeds being planted and new flowers blooming and growing. We are being moved. But sometimes it's a challenge. Sometimes it's frightening and jarring, and it's not easy, and it's never complete, and you never see the whole thing. And sometimes it feels certain and sometimes uncertain, as if you're taking a step backwards. And people get angry and upset for a while and walk away, and sometimes they come back and everything changes and the move carries on. It's a deeply personal God each of us brings to the church, and somehow that is our offering to each other, and that God needs to be seen, valued, and cared for always. I knew a moment once of God filling the temple, and everything changed. Years ago, a group of us went to Kirkridge, the retreat center in Pennsylvania, a hot week in July. It was all about preaching, and there were about 80 of us there, Canadians and Americans, and some of them were pretty tentative, and some of them were pretty beat up by the time they got there at the end of a long season. And at the beginning, they stood up shyly and simply announced their names, and then we worked together, and we preached during the day and listened to some of the great preachers of the United States, and then we kicked our heels up at night on the hillsides. And on the last day, we sat in a screened-in octagonal worship center high up on a hill. And someone got up and read the text for the day, which was, they were all gathered in one place, and suddenly there was the sound of a mighty rushing wind. And at that moment, we heard a roar come out of the valley below, a roar like a dragon roaring. And suddenly it swept through the screens, knocked the candles flying, sent the papers all over the place, and then absolute silence as the papers drifted to the ground. And we knew suddenly we had been visited and redeemed, and our week had been blessed. One woman who had said nothing all week, sitting with a set of headphones on so as to be alone, stood up to our amazement and said, I am so grateful that God has chosen someone as unworthy as me to be a minister. Miraculous. Wonderful. Well, we have seen God break through and fill the sanctuary and this congregation with Spirit, and that's why we are here today. I have seen it since childhood, sitting with my mother, my first Sunday school teacher, and learning about Jesus and singing the songs, This Little Light of Mine, I'm Going to Let It Shine, and then meeting the paragons of lay and clergy along the way and having opportunities to serve and walking through people with sad eyes and through sad times and laughing uproariously with glorious times and building a sense of community that I have found everywhere I have gone as a follower of Jesus Christ. And I was thinking in particular, all other things around the full sanctuary of God's presence may belong to other people, but the 200th anniversary of this church was ours. It was ours. From start to finish, from the beginning, Dr. Peter Wyatt, former principal of Emmanuel College, laying out the history of the place, and then in the middle, Catherine Faith McLean from St. Paul's, Edmonton, coming to tell us how it is on the street these days, and then Marvin McMickle coming from Rochester Colgate Divinity School and preaching on Pentecost and blowing the back walls out of the building. The worship experiences were magic, and we built things, and we cleaned things, and we laughed together. And the banquet, remember the congregational banquet along the lakeshore? Was that not the greatest event you could have ever imagined? People had so much fun. We actually talked to each other without being pushed around, people moving from table to table and enjoying the fellowship as never had I seen it before. It was a wonderful and rich year. And musical events in the evening. I remember one in particular, 100 chorus members, choir members from the various churches in the neighborhood and the Roman Catholic Cathedral came. They all sang their party pieces and sang them beautifully, and then they gathered to sing C.H. Perry's I Was Glad. I was glad when they said unto me, let us go into the house of the Lord. And at the rehearsal, when they hit the word glad, the thunder of God came down this aisle and knocked me flat as if my knees were a set of bowling pins, and I will never forget the feeling that we were carried on wings of grace and truth all through that year, and I was able to step off at the end and enter a new phase of my life. Other great events have been in the past of this congregation and shall be in the future, but a moment when the God filled the temple was one in the 200th anniversary year, and it was ours. Immortal, invisible, God only wise, in light, inaccessible, hid from our eyes, but on occasion, in a very graceful moment, God fills the temple with an undeniable spirit and presence, and we know that all is well.